Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by the new brand of non-alcoholic Christian beer, What Would Jesus Brew? Because who needs alcohol when you have Jesus? After all, like cheap beer, religion tastes bitter going down, sedates you, numbs you to your problems while exacerbating them, makes Sunday mornings suck, gives you headaches, explodes violently if you shake it up, reduces your ability to make rational decisions, and makes you ashamed of your sexual encounters. What Would Jesus Brew? Because alcohol is like liquid religion. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
It is right to discriminate against people who engage in aberrant sexual behavior.
Good news, everybody. This is Jake Farwarden from the ImaginaryFriendShow.com podcast, telling you that we did indeed evolve from filthy, stinking monkey men.
Thursday, it's May 2nd, and abstinence didn't work too well for Mary, now did it? I'm your host, No Illusions, and from reluctantly spring-like New York, New York, this is The Scathing Atheist. On this week's episode, the LDS says the Boy Scouts are still just bigoted enough. I'll have sex with Daryl Ray. I'll talk sex with Daryl Ray, which is still pretty good too, I guess. And Benny Hinn will be a cruel, heartless fuck. But first, the diatribe. Before I tell you what happened on Sunday, let me tell you what didn't happen on Sunday. In preparation for this week's show, I didn't go to the Christian page on the Guardian website, and when I wasn't there, I didn't find these headlines. Joel Osteen hates Jews, and I have proof.
The Pope thinks gay people are gross.
Christians must accept that they're almost certainly wrong.
And I may believe in Jesus, but that doesn't make me a Christian.
And what's more, I wasn't surprised when I didn't find those headlines while I wasn't looking for them, because what kind of tampon stain would print headlines like that on a Christian news aggregator? All right, so for Act Two, let me tell you what I did do on Sunday. I went to the Atheist page on the Guardian website, and when I was there, here's the headlines that I did find. Dawkins' latest anti-Muslim Twitter spat lays bare his hypocrisy.
Sam Harris, New Atheists and the Anti-Muslim Animus.
The secular must accept that religion can save.
I may not have faith, but that doesn't make me an atheist.
Now, I didn't just cherry-pick the bad headlines, by the way. Those were the top four on the page. That's what The Guardian was giving the atheists to read. Amazingly, in more than a dozen different faith-by-faith breakdowns, none of them lead off with a story where one of the most prominent and respected members of the group is smeared as a bigot on the thinnest shreds of dubious evidence. But since atheism isn't a faith group, they can lead off with not one such story, but two. As to the accusations against Dawkins, they're the same ridiculous bullshit as always. He says that Muslims are stupid because they believe a human being rode to heaven on a flying horse, and that makes him an Islamophobe. The fact that he also thinks that Christians are stupid for believing a zombie army wandered into Jerusalem doesn't make him a Christophobe, of course. And the fact that he said astrologers are stupid for believing that the relative positions of planets will adversely affect their financial situation doesn't make him an astrologophobe. But if you think Muslims' beliefs are stupid, it's because you're scared of them. The accusations against Sam Harris are only slightly less specious. He's pointing out that a lot of terrorism comes from Muslim extremists, so clearly he hates Muslims. And when he points out that his steak is more of a mid-rare than a medium, it could only be because of his irrational and seething hatred of cows. These accusations aren't new, of course, and they're hardly worth refuting. Anyone who achieves prominence in this or any other social movement will be attacked by jackasses who are trying to make a name for themselves. But there is something to be said for a major media outlet that runs a page dedicated to atheist readers and then loads it up with character assassination pieces from wingnuts. Look, atheism's not a religion, and atheists aren't a faith group. You'll never hear me or any other atheists make the kind of absurd bullshit demands of respect you hear from religious people. You'll never hear us issuing death threats for drawing images of Christopher Hitchens or taking Dan Dennett's name in vain. You'll never hear atheists demanding that anyone capitalize the H in her when they're talking about Madeline Murray O'Hare. And you'll never hear us declare war on somebody for not believing that the magical calamari really turns into the body of P.Z. Myers. But I do think it's fair to ask that we're treated with the same respect that would be afforded to any other group of human beings. There were no stories at all in the other faith sections defaming prominent figures as bigots, and let's face it, you wouldn't have to do a hell of a lot of digging to find stories like those if you were looking for them. Hell, you wouldn't have to weave together strands of suspect bullshit to get there like they had to with Harris and Dawkins. I was so angry about it that I thought about dropping The Guardian altogether as a news source for this program. But then I remembered that they were the only outlet I saw last week that covered the exploding Spanish dildo headline, so they're off the hook. But I'm still really pissed. So what the hell, Muslims? I've been doing this show for 4 months with no fatwa? Get on that shit.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast and bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is my hetero life mate, Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to not have gay sex?
Let's not do it.
In our lead story tonight, the American Humanist Association has filed a lawsuit against Northwest Rankin High School in Flowood, Mississippi.
Go Cougars.
The suit alleges that students endured a mandatory Christian sermon during school hours in an assembly that didn't even have the decency to pretend it was about science or dinosaurs or something. Instead, a representative from the Pine Lake Baptist Church was invited to the school to talk about finding hope in Jesus Christ and even closed the assembly by leading the students in prayer.
Well, I'm assuming there was an imam leading a Muslim show and tell the week before. They probably have all kinds of special science classes like that.
Oh, I'm sure they do, and I'm sure they always stop the kids who try to leave like they allegedly did at this one.
Are they really worried that kids in Mississippi aren't getting any exposure to the whole Christianity thing? Like there were kids leaving the auditorium that day saying, you know what? I'm going to Google this Jesus guy. See what all this shit's about.
Died for my sins, you say, huh? In other legal news, Pennsylvania Judge M. Teresa Sarmina has filed a brief defending a recent decision in the trial and conviction of a Catholic church aide in a child rape conspiracy case. Monsignor William Lynn, the first Catholic Church official in the U.S. to be convicted in the cover-up of child sexual abuse by priests, is facing a paltry 3 to 6 years in prison and is still appealing the decision.
So he's getting a punishment on par with stealing a car. Systematically covering up decades-long righteous rape spree? Or Geico makes slightly less unfair profit that quarter. Those balance.
Well, no. According to Lynn's attorney, his crime was way more benign than Grand Theft Auto. They're appealing the decision because the judge allowed evidence of child abuse cases that predated Lynn's involvement with the diocese.
I didn't start covering up those rapes until well after they clearly happened. Being the defense attorney here is rough. I read they're claiming that Lynn can't be guilty of child endangerment because he didn't actually supervise any children.
Yeah.
It's like blaming the abortion on the coat hanger. Can we keep that? All right. I hope we keep that.
That was a back alley abortion joke.
I'm suggesting we keep it. Whatever.
I'm going to carry on like it never happened. And turning from Catholic pedophilia to Catholic sexism, the Vatican is now officially even less progressive than Kentucky. Former nun and current maverick 70-year-old Rosemary Smead was ordained a priest over the vehement objection of the Roman Catholic Church. She faces excommunication for this heinous act, but dismisses the threat as a, quote, medieval bullying stick the bishops use to keep control over people, though it was unclear whether she was referring to excommunication or Catholicism.
She claims she's not going to let octogenarian men tell people how to run their lives. Instead, she's going to start her own church where a septuagenarian woman will tell people how to run their lives in the same way, minus the male priest rule. Can't exactly use a Bible as a study guide for your feminism class, can you?
And according to a recent New York Times CBS News poll, you can't use the Vatican as a study guide for what Catholics believe either. As many as 70% of American Catholics believe that women should be allowed to be priests if for no other reason than they would rather their sons were molested by women. But the church warns that allowing women to be priests might lead to bestiality and hurricanes like gay marriage did.
In that sense, I'm all for having priestesses. Bestiality and hurricanes are both good job creators.
I hadn't thought about it like that.
Well, absolutely. Those donkey shows are another perfect example of where replacing a man with a woman is definitely an improvement.
And in a follow-up to our lead story from Episode 9, the Church of Latter-day Saints has kind of endorsed the Boy Scouts' decision to kind of lift their ban on gays. Despite the multiple levels of half-assedness involved in the non-committal pseudo-endorsement, conservative Christian groups are up in arms as though something had actually happened. First, to the compromise. Facing pressure from pretty much everybody but Fred Phelps and the Ku Klux Klan, the Boy Scouts are backpedaling their 19th century stance on homosexuality by allowing gay boys to join the Scouts, but not letting gay men serve as Scout leaders.
This is great for preventing the hiring of Scout leaders who are openly gay pedophiles. But I think they might be slightly underestimating the amount of in-the-closet gay pedophiles. You know, the ones who are a bit hush-hush about being a gay pedophile during the job interview process?
Well, now, in the interest of fairness, the Boy Scouts make no claim that their bigotry is based on a fear that gays are pedophiles. They just hate fags. What? And speaking of hating fags, the Mormon Church, the largest financial supporter of the Boy Scouts of America, has sort of endorsed the proposal. Recognizing this as the most anemic action they could possibly take to stem the tide of tolerance that threatens to force the Boy Scouts' hands, they issued the closest thing to an endorsement they could possibly get away with.
Well, if the Mormons are behind it. This is surprising, though. Those Momos are super hetero.
That they are.
Having three wives is double plus ungay.
Well, you're not the only one who is surprised. Among the bloviating, frothing bigots that have voiced opposition to the non-condemnation is one John Stemberger, head of something called OnMyHonor.com. He points out that the Boy Scouts resolution doesn't address how to, I shit you not, quote, manage and ensure the safety and security of the boys in the program.
Wow.
Now, I can't decide here whether this asshole is wondering how they're going to keep the other kids from beating up the gay kids or whether he's worried about the gay kids butt-raping the straight kids, but the tone of the message actually suggests the latter, and I'm offended either way. And from the If You Can't Beat 'em, Join 'em department, the Vatican has sharply criticized the Vatican for failing to prevent ongoing child rape and torture.
Sometimes a worldwide intervention and hundreds of millions of dollars in rape damages makes you take a look in the mirror.
And sadly, sometimes it doesn't. The National Board for Safeguarding Children in the Catholic Church of Ireland couched the horror of the decades of horrendous sexual abuse in terms like unacceptable delay, risky behavior, unsatisfactory response, and double plus ungood practices.
Nice. 1984 double reference on today's episode.
Yeah, we're going Orwellian.
An unacceptable delay would be getting raped, and then in order to rape the rapist back and get some money damages, you had to fill out some paperwork at the DMV first. Maybe a few hours.
Yeah,
that would be an unacceptable delay.
Certainly not a few decades. But the message was clear, and it's in keeping with the recent theme of internal Catholic investigations. Basically what they're saying is, yeah, we did some horrible shit, but we're positively awesome now at not raping kids.
There were a few minor executive oversights, but we didn't want to micromanage, and all the way in Rome, out of context. Who were we to dictate policies to others all the way from there?
And finally, in fuck pretenses, just give me money news, televangelist and hairpiece repository Benny Hinn is asking his listeners for $2.5 million to get his ministry out of debt. Or rather, I'm sorry, God is asking them to give the money, and Benny is just the intermediary, just the tool, if you will.
So there's some mysterious benefactor who's going to match up to $2.5 million in donations, but only during the first 90 days, right?
Right.
And if you donate in the next 10 minutes, he'll throw in this free slap chop of $30 value.
Act now. Supplies of debt are limited. Hinn, whose ministry must then be about $5 million in the red, promises his viewers that if they help God wipe out his debt, then God will help them wipe out their debt. So basically, he's saying that if you have financial problems and you're mired in debt, the best thing you can do is give your limited resources to a guy with a private fucking jet.
Yeah, yeah, I'll get you some drugs. Give me the money and wait right here. Heard that one before.
Well, that'll do it for Headlines tonight. Thank you for joining me, Heath.
Glad to be here.
And when we come back, author and activist Daryl Ray will join us to talk dirty to you.
Next on the list,
Yahweh. Tanya, can you send in Yahweh, please? God, come on in. Just leave the door open, that's fine. Have a seat. I guess that chair's not as comfortable as the throne you're used to, I'm sure. Now, I suppose it's going to be kind of an awkward meeting here, what with my fragile human form being unable to withstand the awesome power of your voice, but in all honesty, in this instance, it's probably better if I do all the talking. Now, I'm sure you've figured out by now that we're not very happy with your performance. Your last several centuries of performance reviews have been well below standard, and I think we all knew that eventually this day was coming. I mean, all we have to do is look over your history. There was a time when we first appointed you. You were flooding the world. You were parting seas, turning people to salt, raining down frogs. You were a go-getter. You were a god's god back then. But now what do we get out of you? We've got the AIDS epidemic in Africa. We've got nuclear proliferation. We've got climate change. What are you doing? You're taking the wheel. You're finding people's car keys, God, finding people's car keys. Did you really think I wouldn't find out about that? You're omniscient. You can't think of anything better to do with your time? I know you work in mysterious ways. You said that on the resume, and we accepted it because of the whole omnipotence thing. But I've got to be honest, here lately, it seems like you're resting on all 7 days. I'm looking back over it. I can't find a significant achievement for you in over 1,800 years. You're averaging less than a miracle a millennia, dude. I've got dead nuns from Germany doing better than that. And I think we both know where this is going, and I want to make it as easy as possible. You're still under contract, so we are going to pay off your contract, but we're going to have Ricky Gervais step in as interim god until we can permanently fill your position. So if you can just leave your keys to the pearly gate with Tanya, and if you need a letter of recommendation, of course you have my number. Well, that went better than I expected. Holy shit, I should have done that centuries ago. All right, I'm really excited to have as my guest today, author, speaker, activist, and renowned expert on the psychology of religion, Daryl Ray. Welcome to The Scathing Atheist.
Great to be on, Noah. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Now, you really made a splash in the atheist movement back in 2009 with the publication of your groundbreaking book, The God Virus. But you weren't always a godless heathen, were you?
No, I actually was religious. Even got a degree in religion, a master's degree, thinking I would be a preacher someday, but that didn't work out too well.
So what was the what put you over the edge there? What deconverted you?
Well, I don't think any one thing deconverted me. I was a pretty super liberal Christian. The older I got, the more liberal I got. You know, pretty soon you just kind of drop out.
Right. Now, do you ever wish that the now you could go back and have a conversation with the then you?
Well, you know, I have thought of that, and I thought, well, there was a number of now me's talking to me back then. I just wasn't listening too well.
Right.
So, you know, when you're infected, it's hard for you to see just how that infection is impacting your ability to evaluate, cognitively evaluate, rationally evaluate arguments and evidence. I've always been very science friendly, and there's never been a time in my life I didn't believe in evolution. I never thought of the creation story as anything but a myth. So, yeah, I was halfway to hell to begin with as far as my relatives, my parents and my grandparents were concerned.
Mm-hmm. They came from a more fundamentalist background.
Oh, yeah, that's very true on all sides of the family. Even to this day, I'm the black sheep in the family.
Gotcha. I know the feeling there. I wasn't raised in a particularly religious household, but religious enough to hate this podcast anyway. All right. So the God Virus has only been out for a few years. It's already become a staple in the atheist library here. But the reason I asked you on today is to talk about your new book, Sex and God, How Religion Distorts Sexuality. It's a fantastic read. But before we get into the details, can you tell me, who did you write this book for?
Well, I'm not sure I wrote it primarily for people who were struggling with their sexuality, but were probably out of religion or trying to figure out how religion is continuing to impact them. I wrote it for the liberal Christian, for the spiritual person, for the atheist, for the humanist. I doubt if too many fundamentalists are going to read it, so I wasn't who I was writing to. And I didn't try to be kind to religion. I'm not very tolerant of some of the crazy stuff I see religions doing to, in the name of sex and sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you can be. You can't pussyfoot around this stuff. Religion really does real and present damage to people's sex lives, and by extension to their entire personalities and their entire lives.
And not just religious people. That was one of the really interesting points that you made early and often in this book. I expected to spend most of the book looking outwards and pitying those poor Christians and how their faith had distorted their sexuality. But what I found is, despite not being raised in a religious household, their faith was distorting my sexuality as well.
It is. And that's what surprises me. As I've done my research, both empirical research and, library research, it really came to the strong conclusion that we live in a very polluted culture that's telling us what we can and can't be sexually. And as a result, we don't realize this. Many people I know that have been pretty much atheists their whole lives or humanists their whole lives still carry myths that they learn from this religious culture that we live in. And that's one of the main reasons I wrote the book, is I want to explode these myths. I want people to start looking at their lives and how they live their lives as sexual beings and creatures, and expunge ourselves, disinfect ourselves from these ideas that come from our culture. And there's a lot of them. They're just kind of sitting there. And you think, well, that's normal human behavior, or that's normal to believe that, or that's the right thing. When you really look at it, things like premarital sex or extramarital partners or masturbation, mm-hmm. there's just lots of myths around these things. And that's why in the book I go to so much trouble to look at what other cultures have, their beliefs and their practices.
Yeah, there was a list in the book, and a lot of them, and of course, I always assumed that I had this very liberal, non-religious, tainted view on sexuality, but things like, if you believe that pornography hurts women and children, if you believe that a man who has a lot of sexual partners just uses women, those are things that are deeply ingrained in my own mind, and then when I'm forced to re-examine them, I say, where did that come from? And of course, it did come from that religious influence. It came from that religious influence on my culture.
Right. And so why do we let that influence us? Well, because we don't even know it's influencing us. It's kind of hidden. It's kind of slipped in. It's kind of like a fish swimming in a polluted stream. The fish doesn't know the stream's polluted. And yet every cell in that fish's body is imbibing the pollution that's all around it.
All right. So here's the $64,000 question then. Why is God so interested in what we do naked?
Well, that's a very good question, Noah. I think it's directly related to what I call the guilt cycle. Religions have to have a hook to get us in and keep us into their particular religion. You know, it's not like religions are not generic. You don't have generic religion. You have specific God viruses, as I talk about the God virus.
Mm-hmm.
You have specific religions called Mormonism or Baptist or Muslim. Or Hindu. Those are very specific, and they have very specific practices. Those practices are the ones that keep you infected with that particular religion. You don't get infected with religion in a generic way. You only get infected with a specific religion. And what I've learned, what I've seen in my research and found throughout all patriarchal religions, especially patriarchal religions, is that they have to have a way to hook you and keep you, and sex is the best way to do it. Nobody is born feeling guilty about premarital sex. Nobody's born feeling that you're going to go to hell if you masturbate.
Mm-hmm.
That has to be learned. But it has to be learned from a particular religious infection. So Mormons have a specific way of viewing masturbation. And it's different than the way Catholics view masturbation. But both are guilt-driven. So you learn these guilt things. And then the religions say, and if you do this, you got to come back and get forgiveness.
Right. Got to come back for more religion.
Right. And the only place you can get forgiveness for masturbating as a Mormon is at the Mormon church. The only place you get forgiveness for masturbating as a Catholic is from the Catholic church. No Catholic goes and gets forgiveness at a Mormon temple.
Right. Now, you talk about, in the book, the difference between guilt-based faiths and shame-based faiths. Can you expound on that a little bit?
Yeah, it's maybe a bit of an oversimplification to just say it in the way you just did.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's a good way to put it, just to get the conversation started. All religions use guilt, and all religions use shame, to some degree. It's just that some religions put a hell of a lot more weight in one than in the other. And it's convenience. It's the best way for that religion at that particular time. So if we look back, say, in Christianity in the 12th century, it was a pretty shame-based religion. And when I talk about shame-based, I mean a religion that involves the community in the sanctioning of people who violate the cultural norms, the religious norms. So women who did not dress properly in the 12th century could be stoned to death as witches or, you know, something like that. And what you see in Islam and in Hinduism is those are both shame-based religions. And shame-based religions are very interested in controlling, especially controlling women's sexuality. So that's why the hijab is such a big deal. The veil in other religions, the covering of women, you know, you don't hear about the covering of men nearly as much as you hear about the covering of women in Hinduism and in Islam and in early Christianity. A woman should cover her head when she's in church. She should be quiet, Paul said. And Catholics for centuries basically said that women had to be covered when they came into the church. And even to this day, you look at the way nuns dress. Nuns look a hell of a lot like Islamic women.
I mean, right.
Hijab looks a hell of a lot like a habit. So, and that goes clear back to the traditions of early Christian shame-based religion. But the problem with shame-based religions is if you have a culture that's very individualistic, it's hard to shame people into behaving a certain way if there's no sanction for it. It's hard to shame a woman into covering herself if she doesn't, there's no sanction for her wearing a bikini or going out in a skimpy swimsuit or wearing short pants. So in that sense, how do you keep people infected with the religion? You have to change it from shame-based to guilt-based. And guilt-based is more individualistic. Shame is more cult, is more group-based. And that's the distinction I try to make in the book. And I think it's a very important distinction for helping us understand where the patriarchal religions have come from and where they're going, why they behave the way they do, and why they treat women specifically the way they treat women.
Right.
That's why I went to some length in the book discussing guilt-based versus shame-based religions.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, we're running out of time here, but it seems like we're just scratching the surface. So if you don't mind, we're going to pause. You and I will keep talking, and then through the miraculous fourth dimensional properties of podcasting, the listeners are going to rejoin us next week, okay?
All right.
All right, so I'm going to give the hard sell on the second half of this interview real quick. Can Daryl Ray help you find a secular therapist? Is Heath Enright swinging more pipe than a gorilla? Will Daryl teach me a secret technique to make any woman orgasm in seconds? Probably not. But we'll find out the answer to these questions and more on the next Scathing Atheist. All right, we've only got a couple of minutes left, and apparently we had a pretty error-ridden show last week, so I've got a few corrections to make before we close things out. Most of the mistakes came in the Holy Babel segment, and most of it was stuff like saying Jacob when I meant Joseph, or saying brothers instead of sons. For all that stuff, I apologize, and we will try to do better. But one way or the other, I wouldn't recommend using this show as a standalone source for the Bible. There was one major correction I want to make to last week's show, though. We got duped into reporting on essentially an Onion headline last week. The story about the Christian couple who maintained their abstinence for years after marriage was a gag piece from Lark News, and if I'd made any attempt to vet it at all, I'd have figured that out. That's a huge fail on my part, and I want to apologize for it. We're not exactly a hard news show, but that doesn't excuse me for my due diligence as a newscaster, and I owe you better than that. Obviously, I want to extend a huge thanks to Daryl Ray for such an informative and entertaining interview. I also want to thank Jake Farr Wharton of the ImaginaryFriendShow.com podcast for providing tonight's Farnsworth quote. He's got a really good podcast if you haven't checked it out. It's kind of like ours, only it's more informed and it's in Australian. We'll have a link to it on the show notes, but I trust our listeners to be able to puzzle out where to go to find the ImaginaryFriendShow.com podcast. Also, I need to thank Heath, as always. I want to thank all the listeners who sent in emails, especially the ones that include news items. That makes my life so much easier. Thanks so much for taking out the time to help. Most of all, though, we've got to thank our three favorite listeners of the week, John, Michael, and Evan, who gave us money. Giving us money is a noble and moral act that brings peace and joy to all the boys and girls, and we are all indebted to John, Michael, and Evan for their heroic selflessness. Oh, and Evan, it went to a bottle of Lafroig, but it was for before we recorded, not after. Remember, if you'd like to prove your virtuous nature in the only way that really counts in today's world, you too can donate to our show by clicking on the donate button on the right side of the homepage at scathingatheist.com. Every little bit helps, but every big bit helps a lot more. And if you want to help out, but you're taking a vow of poverty or something, you can always help us spread the word by leaving a review on iTunes. Those ratings and reviews do wonders to help us build our audience, and they really make my day as well. And that does it for us tonight, but if you can't give enough of us, be sure to check out our erratically published blog, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to us on YouTube, like us on Facebook, and check us out on Stitcher. Seriously, because all the other atheist podcasts on Stitcher are making fun of us. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at skatingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission.
Oh, that is hilarious.
Thank you.